Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings, blessings, and greetings, blessed souls. We're alive because we want to stay alive in Torah Chaim. Instructions of life, Torah Chesed. Instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim. You're now turned into the higher inner frequency of soul class. Number 384, Heart to Heart, from Jerusalem to the rest of the world, program number 3. And for myself, Don Zosio Goodman, your local cyberspace, hopefully friendly activist for all of you, broadcasting the Humley Family Experience. It's now about 9:32 here on Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA. Unifying Souls actually, which translates into 4:30 p.m. if you're tuning in from the Holy Land, Israel. And coming on today will be international human rights activist Rabbi Eliezer Goldstock, who also happens to be the director of Heart to Heart American Jewish Society for Distinguished Children. You can just look on the net and Google up Heart to Heart American Jewish Society for Distinguished Children. Rabbi Goldstock plans to discuss today the blood, sweat, and tears without any fears about what it takes to expand his organization, working not just heart to heart but hand in hand with his wife of Elechana for more than 23 years with their organization Heart to Heart. As well, we're hoping, although Rabbi Goldstock spoke to me before the program, that his wonderful daughter Suri, who spoke on the first two programs, might not be making an appearance. We'll see if she's able to. And if she is, hopefully she'll be able to report on her ongoing experiences working on her art and other daily occurrences while living in Jerusalem, the holy city, Ir HaZahav, the city of gold. Again, our call-in number is 347-838-8669. And meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you. And you were listening to the Diaspora Band, and that was called Amuna. And now I believe we have on Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock. Good morning, Eliezer.
Good morning, Don, from the city of Goldstock. Oh, the city of gold. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to segue in, you know.
Can't hear you. Something happened here. Let me try this. How's that? Nope.
Very much taken by this Yom Rishon Sunday, which was the 21st day of Menachem. those of you who are not aware of it, the Tanya, the seminal work by
Don, I'm having a problem hearing you. I'm going to try to call back and see if I can improve the connection. Okay? I'm sorry. Technical difficulties. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello? Hello there.
Can you hear me?
Barely. I don't know what happened here.
I hear you, but you can't
hear me. Oh, you hear me? Okay.
I hear you now.
You can hear me? Okay.
Okay, yeah. Before we go, we just immersed ourselves briefly into the Alter Rebbe's teaching. I just want to make sure if you can understand the following equation. 7 times 13 equals 28. Did you hear that
Absolutely.
Transition?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Never a question there.
I'm so inspired.
This is a horrible connection. I don't know what happened. You know what? Let me try one more thing here. Bear with me, okay?
Okay.
If you want to go ahead and talk about the Tanya for a moment, it'll give me a chance to see if I can fix this technical problem. You there? Don't go away. Okay. Sorry, I'm going to try one more reconnect. It's not working. I don't know what happened. I got to try the landline. I'm going to try one more thing. Okay? I'm sorry, everybody, but it's just one of those things. I'll call you right back.
In the meantime, we're just moving a little bit. In the darkness of the vanities of this world, and therefore, as we walk through the darkness and vanities of this world, see if
the book One Man, the successful Canadian. What I'm saying, I heard Trevor.
I don't know what's going on here. Having a horrible time with connections.
Can you call from your cell phone?
Yeah, I've tried both methods here, and neither one of them are working. I don't know. It must be the Kipa Barzell is protecting everything here.
I don't know. But you hear my voice?
All right. I can sort of hear you. Can you hear me, though?
I hear you perfectly clear.
Oh, okay. So I will go ahead and talk if I don't hear you when you try to cut in. You'll understand that it's not anything personal like usual, but it really is a technical problem this time. It happened to be that I wanted to start off with as usual, there were two elderly Jews who hadn't seen each other in like 50 years. And they meet and they slowly recognize one another and they embrace, you know, they're so excited and happy to see each other. And they go back to the apartment of one of the friends. And the conversation continues on for hours. And as the night goes on, one of them says to the other one, can you look at your watch and tell me what time it is?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I don't have a watch. The first fellow says, well, where's your clock? He says, I don't have a clock. He says, well, how do you tell time? He says, you see that trumpet over there in the corner? The friend says, he says, yeah. He says, that's how I tell time. He says, what, are you crazy? He says, how do you tell time with a trumpet? He says, I'll show you. So he goes over to the window, opens the window, and he blows a deafening blast out the window of his apartment.
Mm-hmm.
A few seconds later, you hear angry neighbors all yelling, it's 2:30 in the morning. What are you doing playing a trumpet? He says, the man says, turns to him, he says, you see, that's how I tell time with my trumpet. So you see that not everything is as it appears to be, right?
Right.
So, sometimes one thing can be substituted to use for another. One of those days where if it can go bad, it will, and it did. So I really wanted to talk a little bit today about, first of all, disability in Israel, and
mm-hmm.
secondly, and probably the priority of the discussion today should be the a little bit about what's going on here in Israel and the anti-Semitism that is pervasive in the world. It seems like everybody's having a problem understanding it. You know, one of the great enigmas of history is the world's obsession with the Jewish people. And from the inception of our people 3,800 years ago, and throughout a long history of to right up until today, the Jewish people have evoked a passionate response. And I think you will agree that we were never really great little league players. I mean, in my day, I don't know what happened in the days after that. And we pretty much stayed out of the big leagues of spotlight. And yet we managed to be caught up in the center of all of the world's events, even before Israel. And for the past four millennia, I would say, almost every great culture and civilization has been obsessed with the Jews, for better or worse. So we see, for example, let's just all there are many other methods or ways of reaching a religious, so to speak, connection. You have gurus who sit on mountains and meditate. But right, I mean, really, nobody's bothered by that. And
right.
When a shaman, an Indian shaman, in America, the American Indian, smokes peyote and goes into a trance, who pays attention to that?
Right.
Or a monk secludes himself in a monastery, right?
Right.
And nobody pays attention to that, right? But when the world spots a Jew, even an assimilated, self-hating Jew, it experiences an allergic reaction. What's that all about? Right? Suddenly, everyone is sneezing anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, I'm going to kind of mix a few things up here, just to make it interesting, I guess. Disability, and I'm going to bring this in only for a specific reason. Hopefully, this will become painfully obvious. Disabled people will soon have access, by the way, to the old city of Jerusalem. We're now seeing a project that we are participating in, ever so gently and from the sideline. The Jerusalem Development Authority has announced that they're going to put $5.75 million into a project that will allow construction for access ramps and other improvements in the Jewish quarter and for the churches and for the other areas in the City of David, all of which have not been previously were all inaccessible to disabled and handicapped. And Arut Sheva reported just recently on this project. And I thought it was interesting because it's going to include sloping ramps and stairs that will provide access, wheelchair access, that will change according to accommodate the various individual. And the tourists tell us that when they finally get to the various sites in the old city, that this disabled project is one of those things that is going to improve accessibility. There is now a free shuttle bus that's just been launched in the old city that is going to adapt, that is completely adaptable for wheelchair access and for other people who have challenges in trying to fully access the old city. We have the world-renowned violinist Yitzhak Perlman, who was afflicted by, as a child, with polio. And he was a part of the impetus for seeing to it that Israel's has what he referred to as a ruthless determination in tackling head-on the physical challenges and physical problems that arise, that have arisen, either from natural causes, which is terrorism, and war, that we never see, that's behind the headlines, so to speak. In this world's consciousness, the world of Israel, in the word Israel, within the word of Israel, has become equated with fear. When we see that we have the laboratory for healers of disease, that's what we're known for, right? But there's an amazing quantity of research, of inventions and newfound techniques that are curing and helping people who are blind, who are paralyzed, to help them lead normal lives. Now, the scientists at the Hebrew University have developed a drug for the treatment of Alzheimer's. There have been many, many, with not only for Alzheimer's, but also for paralysis, paraplegic, And Israel is different. Why? Because all of the, for example, all of, do you remember Franklin Delano Roosevelt? Well, you don't remember him, but you know who I'm talking about when I say FDR, right? So FDR was a paraplegic, was a quadriplegic. Did you know that? Most people did not know that at the time that he was president. And during the time that he was the president of the United States, he would never allow anyone to photograph him standing up or sitting down. He had to already be seated or already be standing, but not show him in the process of standing, you know, getting up or sitting down. People who wake up in Israel with a brain injury or a birth defect or paralysis, epitome of Jewish courage and Israel's joy is that we are a microcosm in the unfailing spirit, so to speak, of many of the West. And they associate that with being an Israeli. Chromosomes, by the way, will never be the last word when it comes to achieving a level of functioning with the population that we work with. Now, in contrast to all of this, in Palestinian society, the most famous disabled person was a Hamas founder. His name was Ahmed Yassin. In Iraq, terrorists used many disabled women for suicide attacks. In Israel, a Jewish youth with Down syndrome, for example, can ask to be inducted into the army, not to be a suicide bomber. And the story of the Middle East conflict is a death cult versus Israel's right to life and right to inclusion. The Brookdale Institute released last month, it's a couple months ago now, that over 1 million adults with disabilities live in Israel, and the growth rate of this population is 3 times higher than the rest of the population. In addition, most of the people with disabilities, by the way, live independently in the community rather than in institutions, which is very unlike what you see in America. We want Israel to be the leader in terms of inclusion of people with disabilities in society. There are many foundations that are actively participating and seeing to it that that becomes a reality. And there needs to be a new generation of services for people with disabilities who want to be involved in our society and who want to contribute to it. And this is something that is so important. Accelerating inclusion in Israel will transform the lives of hundreds of thousands of people with disabilities in Israel and across the world. Why? Because the innovative technologies that are coming now through our activities here in Israel and the social ventures are an expression of a strategy to transform people's lives. And we have the tools to see to it. We'll have access to entrepreneurial activities, even with a disability. Now, back to my original discussion, with all the cultures and civilizations and people that we have talked about over history, Rav Kook, Avraham Isaac Kook, who lived from 1865 to 1935, was a chief rabbi in Israel. He said that we have emerged on the world arena to grant humanity a unique contribution, a philosophical perspective, a scientific truth, an artistic expression, a political principle, a technological development, and so forth. Assyria, Babylonia, Persia, Greece, Rome, the Byzantine, and so forth, and the other cultures as states left their individual mark, small or large, positive or negative, on civilization. Once the people or civilization gave the world the gift of its genius, it left the center stage. The civilizations presented their sermon, their pathos, and then they moved on to allow for the next speaker to emerge and deliver his subsequent message to humanity. And And how about the Jews? From the moment they ascended to the center stage of history to deliver their message to the world, they have never descended. They have not even moved slightly off stage. The Jewish people remain standing in the center of every age and milieu in history, while the Greeks and Romans of old have vanished, and the Jews still manage to constitute the hot topic at dinner parties and political conventions the world over. That's Rav Avraham Isaac Kook. Is that amazing? Now,
it's like a liberty bell to awaken those who are sleeping, Eliezer.
Yeah, absolutely. And this bell is not cracked.
That's right.
The chutzpah coming from the United Nations by giving a forum to leaders who deny the Holocaust and vow to create a second Holocaust, God forbid, ought to shake us up and allow us to experience our underlying unity with each other. This is no time for divisions and fragmentation amongst our people. This is a period in history when we must stand united and empowered with courage and resolve to stand up against Jew haters.
Amen.
And that's just Jew haters the world over. The UN, the UN, represents that. As difficult as it is to believe and as hard as it is to understand, their hatred is real and deep, but so is our unity with each other and our inner strength to confront them.
True.
You know, 40 years ago, America watched news reports of Woodstock. Remember Woodstock?
I was about 7 years old.
I was about 3. But anyhow, so a rebellion of the youth of the 60s culminated with what was a cultural symbol, the Woodstock. And the Rebbe spoke, and I don't want to get into the whole thing about Woodstock, but the Rebbe spoke about this generation because he said that in Judaism, you know, being stoned and drunk and all that is repulsive because it's destructive. And we learned that in Bereishis, in Parshas Bereishis, that we're informed that the intoxication of Noach, and then Moit led to disaster. Okay. Little needs to be said today to validate this truth in America today, as in other parts of the world. Alcoholism obviously has destroyed too many lives and too many families for people who have fallen prey to this devil addiction. Yet, for individuals who have been exposed to all of this, it's even more bizarre that we are enjoined to engage in forgetfulness during the Chag of Purim, that we have to get so drunk that we don't know the difference between, you know, this cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordecai. But obviously the Gemara, when it expresses this to us and its interpretations, while abundant, are pervasive with many explanations that go in depth. But during that period of time, the Rebbe said a very interesting thing. There were two levels of consciousness in which one can distinguish between the Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai. The first is a pragmatic and very materialistic one. The second one is a soulful and eternal one. One speaks in the name of self-interest, and one speaks in the name of personal gain. And the other one, in other words, how are we perceiving this drunken orgy, if you will? And the question really is about what the Rebbe said. He said that there are large segments of American youth who were consciously or subconsciously rejecting the pragmatic but essentially self-serving philosophy of their teachers and parents because it failed to address the depth of their soul. And what the rebel was trying to bring out was it spoke in the name of financial security, comfortable living, and respectable social status. It attempted to impress them with glamour of a comfortable lifestyle, et cetera, et cetera. We are not only animals. We're not only animals because we have an animal instinct, obviously, certain amount of self-gratification, right, self-aggrandizement. But we are souls, and we care about the capitalistic, secure financial future and so forth and so on. Our blessings and our curses are as a result of our ability to embrace goodness and the essence of our souls. The Rebbe believed that we have the opportunity to teach the youth about the true and profound distinctions between the two lifestyles and philosophies founded on the soul's awareness that man was created to become larger than human. Yeah? And that in a life committed to goodness, kindness, morality, and the service of God, the soul encounters itself in its profoundest dreams and tragedies and hopes. More than 45 years have passed, and as they say, you know, in the vernacular, nostalgia just ain't what it used to be. Yet many youth still find themselves muddied, if you will, in the field of superficial messaging coming from their teachers and parents. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to see to it that that this generation, this entire generation, embraces everything that the world hates about us, which really is the essence of what makes us so special. If you think about what is the source of anti-Semitism, the source of anti-Semitism is that the world sees us as a source of higher, of seeing to it that the world was, we came into the world to bring about goodness, and people are jealous of what we have, and whether you appreciate this or not, whether you agree with it or not, it's a very poignant thought that that we as Jews have been have been living in a world whereby we have something that the world wants. You know, somebody looks at their religious experience and they don't see it as this fulfillment of what their goal is, and they see that the Jewish people have had that and continue to have that, whether we were in Israel or whether we were dispersed throughout the lands or wherever we are. We have a Torah that is a guide, that is a moral guide, and that has become when we were at Sinai, we experienced the presence of a living and moral God. And if God exists and there's a moral law that exists, and there are limits to power and barbarism. Who said this? Who said that they hate the Jews because they invented the conscience? You know who said that? That was Adolf Yamach Shemo Hitler. He hated the Jews because they invented the conscience. Now, who else said that we were barbaric power freaks? who was the ultimate power freak, I should say, and knew that the presence of every single Jew would paralyze all of his objections. That was Haman. And assimilation is a problem. This explains why Mordechai kept on provoking Haman by refusing to bow down to him. Why? Because he couldn't simply disappear. When Haman was passing by, why the need to continuously drive Haman mad and evoke his ire like that? Because Mordechai understood that for Haman, just as for all the Hamans in history, it makes absolutely no difference if you bow down or you don't. They will despise you regardless. Their hatred of you stems from your very essence, not from your behavior. You may stand on your head all day in front of Haman. It will mean nothing. The problem is not what you're doing, but because of who you are. Haman
right.
will look at for the convenient excuse by accusing Mordechai of treason. But this is only a front to the true motive of his hatred. Haman sees in every Jew the ultimate enemy to his unbridled power and arrogance. In other words, to hide one's in the hope of putting aside Haman's hatred is futile. Because even in the face of this tiny Jewish infant, of any infant, Haman saw the face of a living moral God. Destroying that face would equal, in his eyes, the destruction of God. We've seen in our own times how this is true. The most sophisticated, assimilated German Jew, excuse me, who was more German than the German, who had, Goethe and Schiller flowing from his lips, who was married to the blonde, blue-eyed Aryan woman, who knew every symphony of Mozart, Wagner, who was an avid student of Nietzsche. This Jew was sent to Treblinka in Dachau, gas chamber, with the same glee as the Aufjud, the ultra-religious Hasidic Jew. In other words, it made no difference in them. They immersed day and night in the study of Torah, this Hasidic Jew was the same as the Nietzsche Schopenhauer Jew. So how can we understand this? The smallest, cutest, most adorable Jewish baby, incapable of harming anybody, any neshama on the planet, incapable of harboring any political, territorial, religious, scientific position, was clubbed to death. With the same passion and brutality as the most productive, accomplished, learned, and respected rebbe. And it was done because Yimach Shemo Hitler saw every single Jew as part of Am Mordechai, the people of Mordechai. And you may be bowing down to the founding fathers of the German culture and the philosophy, and you may be kneeling to the superstars of German's heroes, but you are all part of the nation of Mordechai, Am Yisrael Chai, who would never bow down to Haman, and the Hamans of our time saw the visage of every Jewish child, nothing less than the visage of God. Clubbing that little girl to death would finally kill God too. We have to love like they hate. That's our job. Sometimes we, you and I, must learn from the Hamans of history. And we often hear that some Jews are hopelessly assimilated and lost to our people. Any outreach work that we do towards them, sometimes we feel that the small number of Jews in a small community does not justify the investment of money and outreach work. Well, it does. For Haman and the Yimach Shemo, the Hitler's Yimach Shemo, every single Jew, even the most secular and alienated Jew, was a living embodiment of Hashem himself. And hence, they would not spare any money or effort to seize that Jew and murder him. And we see that if Yimach Shemo Hitler would have learned that there was a single Jew left behind in a Polish village, he would spare no expense, no toil, nothing, send the Gestapo back to fetch that baby, because for him, even the presence of a single Jew obstructed his path to happiness and fulfillment. Even a single Jewish child was a living witness to Hashem. So, can we then do any less today? Can we come and say, some Jews are just too far out there? Why should I work so hard to help a single person? If a Jew is never too insignificant to be hunted down in hate, he is certainly never too insignificant. The solution to anti-Semitism, there is one. And Mordechai understood it very well. That assimilation is not the real answer to anti-Semitism. The anti-Semite sees something in the Jew which would not disappear with assimilation. The solution to anti-Semitism is to fight back with every possible means, with tall heads, erect spirits, dignified with our neshamas intact, dignified. And we need to remember that our salvation will come ultimately from one source, and one source only. And as long as we remain connected with that source, we will never die. Because just as Hashem can't be murdered, so his people will never be destroyed. And we must all recall that the world looks at the Jew and sees God. Humanity looks at the Jew for moral courage, for moral leadership, for moral inspiration. The world is disappointed with Jews who try too hard to fit in and lose their unique contribution to civilization. They want to see in us the living presence of God. And that comes from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. We need to understand that what we have is something very unique and very special, and that is the world's moral compass. And they hate us for it, or they love us for it. And I always reminded the story of the two Jews, Yankel and Levi, walking past the church one day, and a sign on the church reads, $20,000 to anybody who converts today. Both Yankel and Levi were out of work. So Levi says to Yankel, he says, I'm going to do it. The kids need food. Levi says, he says, don't do that. What are you, nuts? He says, no, I've got to. My family needs some money. And Levi says, he walks into the church. Yankel waits outside. Levi comes out a half hour later. So says Yankel, did you get the $20,000 for converting? And Levi looks at Yankel and he says, with a disgusting look on his face, he says, you people are all alike. All you think about is money. So you see that, yes, there are stereotypes. Yes, we've fallen into, why? Because we have a Torah, we have a Gemara that tells us how to handle money and treat people with dignity, you know, when they when they have a financial problem, when they need money, we are prepared to assist anyone and everyone who needs assistance. And we have a way of treating one another, and we have a moral compass, and the world needs to see and understand that that we are a generation who is not only working to improve our own lives, but the lives of every neshama, whether the person is far away from his Yiddishkeit or close to his Yiddishkeit, whether he's what we call a healthy person who is who has no challenges whatsoever, or whether he is a person that, you know, who is differently abled, whether he's a completely capable and able human being or a differently abled human being. We have now got here in Yerushalayim the nucleus for many new projects that are coming along. And as I promised last week, hopefully we will have a chance to provide you with the with Suri's blog, which she's not working on this week. As I said, we had we've had vacation this week, and the kids, by the way, both of my kids work very hard during the year. They get 1 week off a year where they can go and do whatever they want. They just came back from the Museum of Cinema 2 days ago. We went to the Museum of Science. Yesterday we went out in a— you can go on my Rabbi Eliezer Goldstock site on Facebook and see the pictures of us right tooling around in a little, man-powered automobile. It was really a great time. I have to tell you, we had a blast. So they were out today. I stayed home. They just arrived back, but I'm not going to bother Suri. I know many people want to hear Suri talk, but do an interview. But she's just, like I said, just back there, tired. They just gave me the signal that next week we'll get a chance. And they're going to work on— Suri's going to finish the blog and get it up and running. So next week we'll be able to send everybody to the blog. By the way, real quickly, so that everyone knows, we have a landline here in Israel. Finally, this is not a computer generated one. This is a real landline, and I'd like to give everybody the number so anybody wants to call, they can. The number is— wait a minute, I guess I should give it for everybody. If you're calling from outside of Israel, it's 011-972-2579-3491. Did you get that, Don? Don?
Hello.
Okay. And heart to heart, you can reach us at—
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, barely. I don't know what
barely.
The problem
okay.
is.
I think you should read the telephone number one more time.
What?
Read the telephone number
for Jerusalem.
Yeah.
011-972-2-579-3491. One more time. 011-972-2-579-3491. And if you want to reach us by online, you can always reach me through RabbiGoldstock@gmail.com, or you can go to www.hearttoheartamerican.org. That's heart to heart, HEARTTOHEART, American, AMERICAN, .org. And you can always reach us through the donation page. Or you can reach me at 052-86-99972. Or you can reach me through Don. You want to give a phone number? Or you can reach us at also at Heart to Heart, 383 Kingston Avenue, Suite 232, Brooklyn, New York, 11213. Did you get all that? All right, listen, I'm having a terrible time. I don't hear a thing. I'm assuming you can hear me, but I don't know whether we're still connected or not. So I'm going to say have a good week, good luck, and everybody should be well. We had last night the sirens went off, and everybody was, the kids were really kind of shook up by it. So I want to go spend some more time with them, and hopefully we'll be in touch next week with good news that all this is over and that Mashiach has arrived. Culture.
We're going to play a little tune in from the tape, but we're going to do it anyway.